Miles didn't even glance at me. His eyes were fixed on a small, curved patch of garden on the other side of the path, two steps away. Forlorn cowslips with limp stems and papery leaves had been recently planted at the garden's edge. The wind carried the cold scent of overturned earth and a fainter, sweeter fragrance. Lilies of the valley, though I saw none in bloom. Here, too, the grass was close-cropped, though there were several small depressions where the roots of a great plane tree thrust through the dirt. Moles, I thought, or maybe the marks of older plantings. Behind it all ran a crumbling brick wall about 6 feet in height, topped by the knotty intertwined branches of an espaliered tree growing on the other side. This, along with the ancient plane tree, made our bench feel part of a tiny enclave. The sounds of traffic grew muffled. People passing us on the main path just a few yards off seemed to lower their voices. "It's lovely," I murmured. "Hush," said Miles. He continued to gaze fiercely at the green sward across from us. I leaned back against the bench and tried to get comfortable. The brick wall provided some shelter from the rain, but I still shivered. After a few minutes, Miles moved so that he pressed against my side, and I sighed in thanks, grateful for the warmth. We sat there for a long time. Over an hour, I noted when I glanced at my watch, though Miles frowned so vehemently I didn't check again. Now and then I'd glance at him from the corner of my eye. He still stared resolutely at the patch of garden, his expression remote as Cleopatra's sphinxes. Another hour might have passed. The wind shifted. The rain stopped and it felt warmer. The light slanting through the linden branches grew tinged with violet. Beside me, Miles abruptly drew a deeper breath as his body tensed. His face grew rigid, his eyes widened, and his mouth parted. I must have moved as well. He hissed warningly, and my gaze flashed back at the swath of green. At the base of the plane tree, something moved. A falling leaf, I thought, or a ribbon of peeling bark trapped between the tangled roots. Then it gave an odd, sudden hop, and I thought it was some sort of wren, or even a large frog, or perhaps a child's toy. The something scurried across the turf and stopped. For the first time, I saw it clearly. A creature the size of my bald fist. A hedgehog, surely. Pointed snout, upraised spines, a tiny outthrust arrow of a tail, legs invisible beneath its rounded torso. But it was green. A brilliant, jewel-like green, like the carapace of a scarab beetle. Its spikes weren't spikes at all, but tiny overlapping scales, or maybe feathers, shot through with iridescent mauve and amethyst as it moved. Its eyes were the rich damson of a pansy's inner petals, and as it nosed at the grass, I saw that its snout ended in a beak, like an echidna's, the same deep purple as its eyes. I gasped and felt Miles stiffen as the creature froze and raised its head slightly. A moment later, it looked down and once more began poking at the grass. My heart raced. I shut my eyes, fighting to calm myself, but also to determine if this was a dream or some weird, drunken flashback inspired by Miles. But when I looked again, the creature was still there, scurrying obliviously between tree roots and cowslips. Its beak-like snout poked into the soft black earth, occasionally emerged with a writhing worm or beetle impaled upon it. Once, the wind stirred a dead leaf. Startled, the creature halted. Its scales rose to form a stiff, brilliantly colored armor, a farthingale glimmering every shade of violet and green. Vermilion claws protruded from beneath its body. A bright droplet appeared at the end of the pointed beak as it made an ominous, low humming sound, like a swarm of bees. A minute crept by, and when no predator appeared, the scales flattened, the shining claws withdrew, and the creature scurried as before. Sometimes it came to the very edge of the garden plot, where upright paving stones formed an embankment. I would hold my breath then, terrified that I'd frighten it. But the creature only thrust its beak fruitlessly between the cracks and finally turned back. In all that time, I neither heard nor saw another person save Miles, silent as a statue beside me. I was so focused upon the creature's solitary hunt that I might have been bludgeoned or robbed and never known it. Gradually, the afternoon wore away. Gradually, the world about us took on a lavender cast that deepened, from hyacinth to heliotrope to the leaden enveloping gloom of London's winter twilight. Without warning, the creature lifted its head from where it had been feeding, turned, scurried back toward the plane tree, and disappeared into one of the holes there. I blinked and held my breath again, willing it to reappear. It never did. After a minute, Miles leaned back against the bench and stretched. He looked at me and smiled, yet his eyes were sad. More than sad. He appeared heartbroken.
"What the hell was that?"
I demanded. Two teenagers walking by, side by side and texting on their mobiles, glanced at me and laughed.
"The Emerald Foliot," Miles replied. "What the hell is the Emerald Foliot?"
He shrugged.
"What you saw, that's it. Don't get pissy with me, it's all I know."
He jumped to his feet and bounced up and down on his heels.
"Jesus, I'm frozen. Let's get out of here. I'll walk you back across Hungerford Bridge."